Let's be honest, surveys aren't cutting it anymore. Response rates are low, focus groups take weeks, and at the end of it all, you still don't know how people really feel. Talkalytics changes that. Talkalytics is a voice-based feedback platform that captures what your customers are saying and how they're saying it. Tone, emotion, sentiment, the stuff that actually drives decisions. Whether you're testing brand messaging, creative, product concepts, or just want to know if your campaign is hitting the mark, Talkalytics gives you answers that go way beyond the checkbox. Emotionally connected customers spend twice as much. If you want to create real connection, it starts by listening differently. Head to talkalytics.com/getinsights to see how it works. That's talkalytics.com/getinsights. Talkalytics, because the voice always tells you more. Listening to AW360, a podcast from Advertising Week. Recorded live at Advertising Week Europe 2025 in London, AW360 features thought leadership conversations with the best and the brightest in the advertising, marketing, and technology communities. If you enjoy AW360, we'd appreciate it if you took the time to subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, left a positive review, or shared with your friends and colleagues. Thanks for listening. You're listening to the AW360 podcast, where we're recording live from Advertising Week Europe 2025 here at 180 Studios in London. I'm joined for this episode by Eleanor Gilmore, Director of Strategy at BinoBrain. Welcome.
Hi, Richard. Nice to be here.
So for starters, tell us about BinoBrain and your role there.
So in BinoBrain, we are specialists in understanding children and families. We are generational experts, so we have particular expertise in Gen Alpha and also Gen Z. And my role is to guide the strategy of the agency, but also to look at a lot of the thought leadership, produce the thought leadership that we do on a regular basis. So we publish white papers. We run continuous research. We're quite different from many other agencies in that we always have data and insight coming in, because for these generations, you just have to be on the pulse. That kind of sums up what we do. And we work with clients to help them, you know, understand how to tap in to those generations, but also understand what's coming over the hill. You know, it helps with future planning and innovation, because if you're thinking like the next generation, then you're kind of part of the way there in planning.
I'm going to ask you a question, and this is on behalf of my daughter, okay? Just because she'll be hopeful that you have a specific answer here. If I have a child born in February of 2012, would that make her Gen Alpha?
It's certainly weird.
Oh, she'll be thrilled. She'll be absolutely thrilled. Depending upon where you read, she kind of bounces back and forth between, you know, definition-wise. I'm not sure why that is, but she desperately wants to be an alpha. So I will take it from you as an expert in this.
Yeah.
That she's an alpha and it's now official.
It's generally accepted that Gen Alpha was born in 2010, sorry. So,
oh, really?
Think about the launch of the iPad. So it's sort of 2010 to 2014, although with all generational research, the ends are a bit blurred. Mm-hmm. And because there's no set number of years, often it's based on a key event in history. So something like the iPad.
And interesting.
That's also why US and UK scales can differ by a few years as well. So it's worthwhile just checking out, looking at the US and the UK differences too.
Interesting. Well, she will opt for the UK definition regardless of what the US did. Yes, she is. And she'll be thrilled. So let's discuss the rising influence of Gen Alpha since we're on the subject. You know, they're definitely having their moment within our industry, to say the least. How influential would you say they are when it comes to household buying decisions?
I think they're hugely influential. At BinoBrain, we publish the top 100 coolest brands according to kids in both the UK and the US. And you can absolutely see the impact of alphas in there. If you look at the list, there are very few actually children's brands in there. They're all household names. There are things like YouTube, Netflix, Spotify, Nintendo. Of course, we've got kids' brands in there such as Lego, but an awful lot of food and drink as well. And we do know that alphas are being raised on the whole by millennial parents who have this ambition to be a bit more present. They run democratic households. So we often talk about the alpha household as a bit like an SME or a small business with everyone having a seat on the board. And that includes the kids as well. So they have a huge say. We've got data that shows that alphas have an impact on even things like the car for the household. Yeah, absolutely. Driving, encouraging parents to buy electric and things like that. So yeah, huge, huge, huge influence. They're also, I like to think of them as having an open source childhood as well. Mm-hmm. They have all this data at their fingertips and they know how to access it as well, which means they're drawing lots of information that they then impart to the family too.
You know, when thinking of these brands that really knock it out of the park with Gen Alpha, and then going back also to your knowledge of both the US and the UK Gen Alpha set, what sort of overlap is there between those two regions when it comes to the types of brands that really appeal to them?
Well, it's quite interesting. I think there's a lot of overlap, first of all. We find in the US that US-based brands are absolutely higher up the list amongst the US kids because they have a long heritage.
Yeah.
So a lot of the brand messaging, if you like, is instinctive. It's culturally based. If you think about Coca-Cola and holidays are coming, that's just there. For UK, it's slightly different in that they are much more focused on technology. UK kids seem to have access to tech platforms and social media at a younger age than their US counterparts. US parents are more likely to lock down access and keep that locked down for a bit longer. But it does mean that kids in the UK are more likely to be using things like TikTok and Snapchat and other social media platforms at a younger age. That's not to say that the US counterparts aren't. They're just holding off slightly later. But we see a lot of similarity. The top two alternates between YouTube and Netflix in both the US and UK.
Well, that's interesting. I would have thought TikTok would have been higher for some reason. I don't know why. Just because everybody talks about it still, especially in that age group.
TikTok is, it sits in the sort of high teens, low 20s amongst girls, but it doesn't perform particularly well amongst boys.
Interesting. Wow. That's got to be fun stuff to just parse those lists and see all this stuff.
Oh, it is. I mean, you learn constantly. And because we have longitudinal panels of children in the UK, the US and China, and it means that when the data comes out, we've got a ready source of experts to explain to us why things are doing better than anyone else.
Huh.
So it's interesting.
And let's move over to the world of influencers for a bit. You know, unlike Gen Z, Gen Alpha appears to be embracing micro-influencers rather than some of the bigger names. Why do you think that might be?
I think it's down to individualism. I think the millennial parents are raising individuals. The one sort of standout, there are many standout traits of Gen Alpha, but one of the standout traits is their sense of self. And that's based in their individualism. So they have a developing confidence about who they are. Mm-hmm. They can, earlier than any other generation I've worked with, they can describe themselves in the third person. They can tell us that they're the math kid, or, you know, they're the one that has the finger on the pulse and tells everyone about trends, or they're a bit geeky or a bit dark academia. They have a real sense of self And that's based around individualism. And in order to get there, you've got to chase the stuff that you like. So they find their tribe quite earlier. Mm-hmm. And that means often the tribes are smaller. Often it's sort of micro influencers rather than the sort of behemoths, if you like, as of Mr. Beast, etc.
Yeah, that's...
And that's something we've seen in the data over the last, I would say, 2.5 years. Influencers on YouTube have seen a real fragmentation. So whereas we generate data every week from kids, and 2.5 years ago, we would see them congregating around maybe 2 or 3 big influencers, Mr. Beast, Darman, etc. But now what we find is we're getting long, long lists that all evolve around their particular interests.
Wow, that's very surprising, really, considering, you know, I think I would, just given the way YouTube works, as an example, you know, algorithmically.
Yeah.
I only actually know of Mr. Beast. You know, I'm a little out of a demographic, I think, but I actually know of Mr. Beast first and foremost, not because of, you know, children in the household, but because of the YouTube algorithm suggesting him for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how, you know, I'm not sure what I ever looked at that made that connection for YouTube, but it just always feels like, you know, with so much on YouTube, it always felt like only a small percentage really got seen. And so when I think of influencers, that just seemed like a natural thing. But if you have, yeah, I guess, that many kids in that generation, you know, now they're getting all kinds of different content.
And that is absolutely how they discover. It's a lily pad effect. And they move from influencer to influencer to micro-influencer. And also, I think it's interesting when you look at the sort of ecosphere, if you like, of YouTube. Influencers encourage each other. It's all based on collaboration.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely where Gen Alpha are discovering as well. But certainly the algorithms seem to work for Gen Alpha. But also, I think as well, they're used to subverting the algorithms as well. They're much more, probably a bit more in the know than you are, Richard, about how to manipulate the algorithms.
Moving over to social media, which is something when it comes to just about everybody I'm interested in, but I'm also very interested in it when it comes to children, just because of the toxicity of it.
Absolutely.
Do you think Gen Alpha will be as engaged in social as the generations before it, or at least social media as we know it anyway?
I think they will, but I think they're much more discerning. What we are spotting, even amongst the younger Gen Alpha, they have always been, we've described them, they're way beyond digital natives, they're digital masters. You know, we know that 60% of them say that they are really careful about what they put out there, what they put out online.
Mm-hmm.
So they're coming from a much more informed basis. There's also been a lot of education going on via schools, charities, at home as well. Millennial parents are quite pragmatic in that many of them are not locking out social media. They're managing it as a discussion in the household. So I think they're going to come at it from much more informed, but I think they'll choose to engage with the ones that they want to engage with. And what Gen Alpha don't like is they don't like the toxicity. They don't like the negativity. It's one of the reasons that YouTube does so much better than TikTok, for example, because it's seen as a safe platform. They know that they can go on there and their favorite micro-influencers or whoever, they don't have to look at negative comments on videos and things like that. So it's not just about them being targeted. It's about the environment that they're stepping into. And I think as parents and as a society, and quite frankly, as platforms, we should be enabling children to make those choices rather than exposing them to some of the sort of toxicity that we are seeing.
You know, on that note, do you have any sort of research or inclination as to why Gen Alpha specifically grew up that way? I mean, when you think about, well, the other generations before Gen Alpha, we all seem to almost revel in the toxicity at times. You know, you think of things, you know, just the term doom scrolling as just an example. I've always found, you know, here's a term that literally almost everybody uses. And a certain amount of us do it a lot. I don't do it nearly as much as I did, but, you know, I recognize that when I was doing it, I'm doing this thing. It's called doom scrolling. It can't be good. Think of the name. But yet I don't ever recall having a conversation saying, you know, hey, kids, don't doom scroll. You don't want to be doing that. But you're saying that, you know, this generation has largely figured that out. Is that from watching me yell at my phone or how did it get there?
I don't know if they've largely figured it out, because remember, we're still talking about children and we're still talking about kids who are going through levels of development. You know, it is widely reported that the human brain does not reach maturity until about 24 or 25. So let's just take that into account, first of all. But I think what is really clear is that they're being raised by parents who felt the first force of social media. I mean, millennials vomited their lives onto social media, didn't they? You know, whether it's Bebo profiles or, you know, whatever, MSN, Neil days. And they are educating their kids. They're having conversations with their kids. From some of the data that's come out recently around the Netflix show Adolescence, obviously we're not having enough conversations around that. But certainly they're coming at it with a level of knowledge as well. And you've also got a generation that are a bit more tapped into their mental health. They will talk about their mental health. They'll talk about what makes them anxious. They'll talk about, they know they should put devices down a bit more to make them feel a bit better. I think the last time we ran data on it, 35%, the 14-year-olds, actually switched off their mobile phones to make them feel better at times. So they are coming with a knowledge that perhaps we as previous generations haven't. However, we are adults, and as adults, we have a responsibility to think about that doom scrolling and think about the mirroring. Children are really vocal with us in that they wish their parents would spend less time on their mobile phones.
I've heard things about this. I don't know where. Well, Hunter, this has been great. You know, where can listeners find out more about Beano Brain? And I think specifically, where can they get a hold of the Coolest Brands report?
Oh, super easy. Go onto the Beano Brain website, or if you simply Google Coolest Brands According to Kids by Beano Brain, you'll get the links there.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to be on the show today. This was fascinating stuff.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to AW360. For more podcasts like this one, be sure to check out Advertising Week's ever-growing roster of podcasts for the advertising, marketing, and technology industries, including The Trust Makers, our podcast with the Edelman Trust Institute, now in its fourth season. You'll find all of Advertising Week's podcasts at www.advertisingweek.com/podcasts. Thanks for listening.